The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to a Rattledge and Broadcasting premier podcast, Damn You Hollywood. And here's your host. He's born under a bad sign. He's been down since he began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, you know, Robert Winfrey wouldn't have no luck at all. Hard luck and trouble is his only friend. He's been on his own since he was 10. Born under a bad sign. Robert Winfrey's been down since he began to crawl. If it wasn't for Damn You Hollywood, you know he wouldn't have no podcast at all.
Now that's just not true.
Good night, everybody.
Who sings that song?
Yeah, everybody. I mean, it was originally by Albert King.
Well, let's keep it that way.
I could have said anything and you would have said that line.
Yeah, probably.
Who did that? Five Finger Death Punch. Let's keep it that way.
Mm-hmm. That was the setup. The actual artist was somewhat immaterial.
I've been down since I began to crawl. I literally came up with that 10 seconds before we started.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah, don't ever think I put too much thought into this. This is very much like, I look at you, I look at me, I look at us standing in front of a girl in the world, and I go, that song. And I just grab it real quick.
It's like jazz, man. Got to be willing to die out there.
Yeah, you got to feel it. Feel it in your cockles. Speaking of cockles, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, Mark, it's just you and me. So I figured...
That's why I said cockles.
I figured we could indulge one of your personal fetishes and talk about prolapsed anuses.
Oh, hang on, let me get my wife in on this. Hey, we're going to discuss prolapsed anuses.
No, we're talking about John Wick Chapter 4. I don't know why I decided with that particular segue, because it's actually a very good movie. Like that, I should have saved that for a movie that actually sucks.
I don't think it matters.
Talk about catastrophic bodily
injury.
But I do
like the fact that prolapsed anuses get said a lot on this network these days.
Didn't you review that? I feel like there's an album called that by some death metal band.
No, Robert Cooper said it on one of the Metal Hammer of Doom, I think, extras. And I was telling one of our lifestyle stories. Lifestyle. And uh-huh. I started.
Mark, look into the camera. Blink three times if you mean hostage situation.
Anyway, I started into the story, and he goes, oh, no, not another prolapsed anus. And we just kind of went on from there.
Yeah, I can see you two vamping on that for a while.
Yes.
Well, setting aside our chicanery, we are discussing John Wick, Chapter 4. Mark? Quattro. Yep. Four chapters.
So we reviewed, Sean and I did a Long Road to Ruin for the first two. You and I reviewed the third one.
We did.
And then here we are with this one. And you know, Robert Winfrey.
Yes.
Good to his mother.
As much not as a I fan, can.
Not a fan of most things, most movies. But.
That's fair.
You have been a pretty, a solid supporter of the John Wick franchise.
I have, by and large, enjoyed it, yes.
So what is it about John Wick that tickles your fancy?
This is a series that I think, for as great as this movie is, will spoil my opinion right there. I really enjoyed this one.
Mm-hmm.
It lost a little bit of its way around chapter 3.
Yeah.
And it's okay because it found, like, it transitioned from one style of story into another by the time we get to 4. The transition's a little rough.
Story. And
you know what I mean.
There's as much story in this as there is in most porn. I'm not complaining about, but I have thoughts.
I'd argue the first one has story.
Oh, the first one's a real movie.
Yeah.
It gets progressively more into a video game, culminating in what I looked at my date last night and I was like, are we watching like a playthrough of a video game? And I'm just been like had. She's like, no, I'm pretty sure it's a real movie.
Here's the, again, to kind of spoil some of my thoughts, there's another reviewer that I saw, someone share this in our group chat, so you might have seen this.
Mm-hmm.
John Wick 4 is largely just a celebration of the art of stunt work.
That is correct.
And you know what? The Academy is long overdue for incorporating some kind of award for best stunt work. Like, this is an entire industry within filmmaking that is critical to its success. It goes largely unrecognized. It's kind of a shame.
I will tell you, once I kind of got off my haunches and just sort of accepted the movie as what it was, I had a good time with it. I came home raving about it. I told my son, like, I might go take him to go see it because there's almost no plot to this thing. And it's all, like, loosely strung together, extended, outstandingly shot action sequences. This is right up a 9-year-old's alley.
You're not wrong there. So, yeah, I was drawn to the first one because I heard good things, first of all. Like, that was one that kind of just, if you go back into the yonder years, you know, before the world ended, there was a time when word of mouth mattered. And
it still does, but it's,
you know what I mean. Before the streaming wars, before the diminished theatrical window,
your movie could have a second life on video. Yes.
Well, not only that, your movie didn't live and die by its opening weekend.
Right.
A movie could open decently, but have week to week hold.
Right.
And that's largely dead now. But John Wick is one of those that I did not see opening weekend, but I heard enough people say good things that I decided it was worth my time. It did a good job of building a world. It did a good job of establishing character. It makes you root for the protagonist, which isn't always a guarantee or even a necessity, depending on the type of story you're telling. But you root for John Wick to just murder his way through people after they kill his puppy. It's a solidly well-contained, well-shot revenge story that was held up by some decent performances. I had some issues with Keanu Reeves at a couple of points in the first movie in particular.
Boy, he has been reduced to, like, Rob Zombie in this one. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit. but the very well shot, very well choreographed action sequences of the first one really were kind of grab you.
Right.
And I don't know this gentleman personally, but one of the second unit directors for that one, and I think he did some more directing on this one. He works out of one of the more famous stunt studios in Hollywood. And in fact, a few years before John Wick, that team had put together, what do they call them? I forget the name. There's a technical term for it where it's a stunt group that will just show off what they can do and some of the stuff they've been working on. And it's not a spec. It's something with starts with a V, I want to say.
Okay. I kind of know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, again, they're common. I just can't remember the term. So forgive me, but the stuff in John Wick was kind of like had been circulating in the industry as some of these demo reels and whatnot for years before John Wick. But one of the lead guys there has an interesting philosophy about action movies. he thinks that part of what you should be doing is having the star do as much as possible, because people are going to see the movie not to see cool stunts. They're going to see Keanu Reeves do cool stunts. They're going
Tom
to see
Cruise. They want to see Tom Cruise, yes, hang off an airplane,
or, you know, fly drive a motorcycle off of a giant ramp and then paraglide, which he did four times. He's a madman. But this is something lost on a lot of modern Hollywood, with your just giant CGI battles that no one can track and no one cares about. Part of the draw is not just watching cool stuff, it's watching so-and-so do cool stuff. So what they did with Keanu Reeves in the first one was teach him, and he had a little bit of a martial arts background at this point, and he started doing a little competitive shooting, so he looks natural while doing a lot of this stuff. And they taught him a couple of pretty basic moves for the first one that he just got really good at. And again, this is kind of their philosophy. Like, send me your lead. Tell me what their physical limitations are. We'll find something, and then they can do a lot of this, and your movie will look better. So, and you can actually see this with Keanu Reeves as the series progresses. In the first one, he's doing a lot of, I forget the technical jiu-jitsu term, but he's doing a lot of wrist lock takeovers.
Yeah.
And he does that a lot because they taught him to it fairly quickly, and he just got really good at it. So we structure more of our stunts around what he can do physically.
That's one of the things I wanted to mention was, excuse me, the big draw to the John Wick movies was that he had put in some work in mixed martial arts, mm-hmm, and was able to do a lot of the technical hand-to-hand fighting stuff so that it looked authentic. And like the big draw for this new one is not just the elaborate stunt scenes, but those close-up hand-to-hand combat scenes as well. Mm-hmm.
So we live in a world where movies are more and more and more and more artificial, and not always for the better. So the fact that this franchise still leans pretty heavily into as much realism as possible, as much practicality as possible, you know, I'm going to react to that positively because I'm me.
Yep.
So
I think there was a comment made in our group chat, and it's been more of a theme lately of us kind of, and we've talked about it on the show, that tacit recognition of the vast majority of people who go to the movies are men. And you have families, and then you have women, kind of in that order. And the thing that tends to get men to go see the movies is they want to see someone they can look up to do things they want to do. So, you know, Tom Cruise in Top Gun Maverick is a good-looking fella who gets the ladies and gets to fly jets and break rules and generally be a badass. And who amongst us doesn't want any of those things? John Wick is able to, semi-realistically, put on a Kevlar suit and march into hell and hand-to-hand fight and or shoot armies of bad guys and look awesome doing it. And he never says anything really quippy.
He's not really.
He's not witty. He's not sharp. Most of his lines in this movie were, yeah. And I will tell you, if you're like, if you get a group of guys, like, and you put an array of heroes in front of them, they'll gravitate more towards the John Wicks than they do Ant-Man. Like, most guys are not Paul Rudd. We're not like quippy and sharp and kind of beta. You know, most guys kind of alpha, but also not the quippiest and sharpest. Like, men, not known for being wordsmiths, generally speaking.
And the average man, not a great wordsmith. I'll give you that one.
So when
we sit here indulging in nothing but wordplay,
we're geniuses. But what I'm saying is, like, John Wick is really one of those guys as a character that I think taps into what men want to see on screen. And then we'll get to it with the money. Just like with Top Gun Maverick, men respond accordingly.
Yeah. As just a minor thought to Hollywood going forward, try not to insult half the human race. Maybe you'll attract more money.
Try not to be utterly condescending. People will then show up to your movie. All right, John Wick 4. It should not take you long to get through this.
It shouldn't.
And it's not like you have a lot of, it's not like you have a lot of like, oh, and this bothered me. So like, we should be able to wrap up this plot synopsis in like a couple of minutes.
So John Wick 4 opens sometime after the third. John Wick has recovered physically from falling off of a building.
Hang on. I do have to address that because he fell off a building in Parabellum. And when we talked about it, I was like, I understand this is a fiction, but we went with, much like James Bond, the Daniel Craig James Bond, we went with gritty realism. And then they did some stuff to Daniel Craig where I'm like, there's no possible way he lives through that.
Yeah.
And I was like, and at that point, your aesthetic was broken. Mm-hmm. And with John Wick, I kind of had the same problem with Parabellum, where they dropped him off a building all Scarlet, all Black Widow style, and he just kind of like, I'll be all right.
He hits he hits a couple of balconies going down.
Yeah.
Like it's bad.
So he does kind of a thing here. And I know I was thinking it, but somebody in the theater actually just blurted out that nigga dead. And I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, there's a few different times. And you're like, by the time it broke some of the aesthetic of three, I agree. Mm-hmm. By the time we get to four, I think we're in on what's going on here, right?
Like, yeah, after the first major action sequence, I was like, okay.
This is what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to accept that he is covered in plot armor. And as long as there's sufficient dramatic tension, and we'll talk about the ending when we get to it, as long as this is saved by a proper ending, I'm going to just go for the ride. I don't want to really deconstruct this that much.
So we open an indeterminate amount of time after that. Lawrence Fishburne is sort of badly amalgamating various pieces of classical literature. As he offers John Wick, who is punching a Makiwara, which I only wanted to bring up because I know what that is, and I don't get to use that information almost ever.
You're so smart. We're so happy you're here.
I'm a martial arts nerd. I know a Makiwara when I see one.
Okay.
He is working one of those, and John Wick is given a suit, and he is ready to go back to battle. So he rides horses through the desert and shoots an Arab, very similar to the one who he met in part three. Murders him dead because John Wick is declaring war on the High Table, Mark. The High Table, that which we are all under. And the table's not very happy about this. So they send Clancy Brown. And when Clancy Brown shows up, you know stuff's about to get real.
Yeah.
So he shows up at the New York Continental.
It almost feels like they sent him in from another movie. Like, I showed up from like Death on the Nile or something. I'm like, look, I have other business to attend to in other movies and other universes. So here's the deal.
I'd take a spinoff with Clancy Brown in the John Wick universe. I'm just saying.
Yes.
I'm never mad about Clancy Brown getting work.
Nope.
He shows up at the Continental and delivers an hourglass. And he tells Lance Reddick, who we miss very much, and Ian McShane, you're done. The table is not happy with you. And Ian McShane goes, but why? And he goes, take it up with bad GSP. Which I'm going to refer to the Marquis because I don't know if that gentleman's actually French, but boy, his accent was.
He sounded like me and Jesse when we're like doing over French on Source Materials. Like, oh,
dude, I've heard Pat Mullen's GSP impression. It's excellent.
Yes.
It sounded a little like that. Like, it's just it's just weird. Anyway, they are not happy with the handling of the John Wick situation, so these two gentlemen go to plead with the Marquis, who is he's disappointing in every way. And he says, no, I will not be swayed. And then he blows up the Continental. And then he shoots Lance Reddick and says to Ian McShane, you are now out. Go and die in what way suits you best. And Ian McShane leaves and buries his friend. And John Wick shows up and goes, you shot me the last time we saw each other. And goes, yeah, I kind of had to get out of that situation. But I shot you in the bulletproof vest. So, you know, suck it up. And he tells John Wick, the entire High Table, this nebulous concept, has now granted the Marquis, this fruity French guy, all the authority. And if you want to best him, you have to do it via the old ways, Mark. Not the new ways, the old ways. And you can challenge him to a duel. And if you do so, you can name your terms. And we can wrap this thing up with a neat little bow. And John goes, but I have no family. I have no people. I am out. And he goes, your family is technically a member of the High Table. Like, but if you recall what happened in the third movie, I cashed out my relationship with them. And Ian McShane looks at the camera and goes, boy, if the writers had put some forethought into this, we could have shaved 20 minutes off of this movie, couldn't we? And he goes to Berlin. Well, sorry, I skipped one scene. He is found briefly in Japan by Donnie Yen.
Briefly.
There's an action scene. He's in Japan. He's with an old friend of his, the actually very talented actor. His name I can never remember. Hiroyuki Sanada, who's again very good actor. Oh, Bill Skarsgård is the Marquis. I did not recognize him. Okay, yeah, that accent. Sanada, his old friend, is kind of harboring him, and Donnie Yen shows up, and Donnie Yen and John Wick have history, and Donnie Yen is blind again because the writers saw him in Rogue One and went, hey, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
And Donnie Yen is very cool, so it still works.
Donnie Yen makes looking blind cool.
He really does. In another life, he could have been the perfect Matt Murdock.
Yes.
Sadly, he is too old and a bit too Asian.
I think you beat me to it.
Just a bit. They show up. They fight John. Sanada dies. He is killed by Donnie Yen, and his daughter, who witnesses this, swears vengeance at the blind man. Who warns her, yes, I'll be waiting for you. All is well. Go in peace. he winds up in Berlin, where John Wick is now trying. There's also a character who appears throughout this story, but I'm not entirely sure why. We have Mr. No One.
Yes, and his dog.
And his dog, who is relatively superfluous to all of this. John Wick goes to Berlin. He rejoins the Ruska Romani. But in order to get back in, he has to kill an overweight man with gold teeth. So we get that pointless side quest.
And that, like, level boss.
Yeah. Like, if there's one thing that really could have been cut out of this movie, that whole side plot just could have been axed.
Yeah.
But John is successful. He is then reintegrated into the Romani. They issue the challenge to the Marquis. And Bill Skarsgård takes time away from reminding everyone that they float down here. To accept the challenge, they meet in Paris, where they discuss terms. The Marquis wants to fight with blades. They actually have a really cool setup for this. They each have, like, a series of cards in front of them with different numbers on them. And if you disagree about terms, you each flip over a random card. Whoever has the highest number wins. The terms wind up being pistols at dawn at the Sacred Heart Cathedral in Paris. And minor note, props to the people for showing off Sankakor instead of Notre Dame. Notre Dame's been done to death. This is actually a very cool cathedral they showed off here. And the Marquis decides, I am a pansy. Don't you understand? I am French. We don't do anything. So he gets Donnie Yen to do the bat to fight for him. Donnie Yen is under his thumb because Donnie Yen's character has a daughter. And he is constantly reminding Donnie Yen, do what I say or else I'll kill your daughter. And Donnie Yen is becoming more and more fed up with this entire situation as the movie goes on. But they agree to these terms, and the Marquis decides, you know, I really don't want to gamble on any of this. So he puts out a hit. There's already a hit out on John Wick. He puts out a bigger hit. He ups the ante. He ups the price tag. And he recently saw The Warriors, I guess, so we do that. Like, the John Wick getting from his armament sequence under the streets of Paris to the final duel is just The Warriors. You've seen Warriors, you've seen that segment.
So I mentioned to my date, you know, the thing about the video game. And so there's a sequence here. I'm interrupting you just because it's not really a craft group, you know, criticism. It's just an observation that I made, kind of a joke. I said, so you know how we're watching a video game? And she's like, it's a movie, but yeah. She's very literal. I'm like, okay. So this part
I appreciate literal people being one of them myself.
Oh yeah, she's one of your people.
Hey, I know who you took. Don't do that. That hurts. Oh, okay. Okay, no, I made an assumption then. I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's not the Kelsey.
Yeah, I was gonna take offense there.
No, oh god, no, sorry. somebody else. So he gets close to the top of the stairs, and then one of the big bosses comes down. Mutton chops, and they get in a fight, and he gets knocked all the way back down. And if you've ever played a video game, mm-hmm. made progress, died too many times, and had to start, not at that level, but at the way beginning, I've had those moments where I've spent hours doing something. There was no place to save. There was, you know, nothing for me to do to save my progress. And I lost it all, hours worth of work, and just rage quit the game. And so I turned to her. And so when he hit the stairs at the bottom, I looked at her and go, this is where I would rage quit this game.
Yeah. Donnie Yen shows up and decides he wishes to help John Wick get to the duel.
Well, he needs John Wick to get to the top, because if there is no duel, then there is no saving the daughter.
Yeah. Mr. No One shows up with his dog. He's been trying to get the Marquis to pay him a ridiculous sum of money to kill John Wick.
No, he's totally there to kill John Wick. But there was an earlier scene where John Wick saved his dog.
Yeah.
And so now he's just kind of obligated to like let him get to the top of the stairs.
Yeah, look. This was almost a why did you say that name? Almost.
Mm-hmm.
But he's established to have a good relationship with his dog, and it's John Wick, so of course he's going to save the dog.
Yep.
But, look, man, if you wanted to end Avengers Endgame a lot faster, you have John Wick's puppy be snapped by Thanos. Like that, and we're done in less than 3 hours.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, he saved this guy's dog, and No One winds up helping him out, and we get to the duel. And the structure of the duel is as follows. We have dueling pistols. You get single shots. They start 30 paces apart, and you shoot at each other. And if both men are still standing after that, we move 10 paces closer. Repeat until you can't miss. So they start 30 paces apart, and they wing each other. We get closer. And John Wick gets shot in the shoulder, and he shoots Donnie Yen through the kidney, low here on the abdomen. And we get 10 paces closer because neither's going down. And Donnie Yen shoots John Wick through the abdomen, and John Wick drops. And the Marquis jumps in and goes, this is my duel. I demand the right to deliver the coup de grace. So he takes the gun and he walks up to John Wick, and Ian McShane looks at him and goes, you dumbass. He didn't shoot. And John Wick smiles and pulls out his gun, still loaded, and shoots Pennywise the Clown through the head, blowing his brains out the back of his skull like you do. And all is now well in the world of John Wick. John Wick is absolved of any and all obligations to the High Table. Ian McShane is reinstated, and his hotel will be rebuilt. And that's all well and good. And Donnie Yen is no longer obligated to the Marquis or any future Marquis, and his daughter is safe. And it's all hunky-dory. And John Wick looks at Ian McShane and just goes, make sure they take me home to bury me, because he's dying. And he walks over and he sits down on the steps. And he watches the sunrise. And he thinks about his dead wife. And he very slowly falls over. And we then cut to a graveyard in New York, where Lawrence Fishburne, now bald, and Ian McShane eulogize the late John Wick. There is, however, a moment It's a weird little moment, and I wouldn't be too miffed if you missed it. But Lawrence Fishburne has with him John Wick's dog. And there's one scene where, as they are talking at the grave, the dog stops paying attention to them and looks off camera. And there's a little wag to his tail. So there's a very clear hint that John Wick might not, in fact, be dead. But he also might be. They leave it. It's a nice little way to leave open a potential sequel without beating you over the head with it. I actually appreciated that.
Yeah.
But these two gentlemen head back off to their respective duties. Lawrence Fishburne as the underground king of the homeless everywhere. All the homeless. This guy is, he's the actual ruler of giant chunks of India. And Ian McShane to run his hotel. And Dan, in our post-credit scene, Donnie Yen is reunited with his daughter and it feels so good. But the vengeful daughter from earlier shows up because the cycle of vengeance is never ending. And we smash cut away with, hey, watch Kill Bill Volume 2 coming up in the future.
So I want to talk a little bit. Derpy sent us a comment earlier. He might be gone now, but he was like, so how generic was it? I don't think it was generic at all. I think the most winningest thing about John Wick 4 is the style of the combat scenes.
Yeah,
that's what's holding this whole thing up. And they get progressively better and better. I will tell you, the best one I think is the bit with the cars and the roundabout.
Because you're you and because I'm me, I have to point this out.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the innovation of that sequence.
Yes, that's what I'm drawing attention to.
However, because they didn't actually shoot this at the Arc de Triomphe in Paris, some of the compositing is not good. Like there's one bit in particular where guys on a motorcycle run into a car and get kind of launched off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you can just tell, like, no, this isn't just them doing this against a green screen,
right?
Like there's not a motorcycle there, they're lifted off on wires. Like it's very, there's some of that stuff that I don't know if it was rushed, I don't know if it was budgetary concerns or whatnot, but as fun as a lot of that is, and it is really fun, like I'm not knocking it, there's some compositing issues throughout that sequence that they got to me a little bit as it kept going on.
I saw it on an IMAX screen last night. I didn't notice, but I tend to not notice that as much as you do.
Which is okay. Again, that's why you're you and I'm me. So
I like the dynamism of that scene. My
dude, him circling that group of parked cars with his car without the doors and just shooting at
them. Oh my god. I told you earlier I was gonna take my son to go see this. I'm like, I had to tell him, like, dude, John Wick blew a bunch of guys up drifting around them in a circle. It was great.
He did. It was great.
I did not like the assault in Japan.
Oh, you're weird.
Okay, so here's why, though. And I was thinking about the Family Guy Star Wars, where the one guy in the Stormtrooper outfit goes, this armor is useless, why do we wear it? And proceeds to get like an arrow through the face. Okay. And these guys are wearing, and I really wanted to talk to you about this because I'm not married to this criticism, but it was something that bothered me. And all I figured, okay, maybe you'll have a better explanation for it. But all of these soldiers have automatic weapons.
They do.
And they're wearing like a plate.
They're wearing, you may not remember this.
Mm-hmm.
They're wearing the same armor that the assault team wore at the end of John Wick 3.
But it feels like it's almost like an apron. And like the top half of their chest is exposed. But they've only got the bottom part covered with this plate that they're wearing. And then, yeah, they're all wearing like ghoulie helmets and whatnot. But, you know, and John Wick has presumably a Kevlar suit. And John Wick is able to tear through these guys in body armor. And they're all throwing themselves hither and thither, hither and yon. Everyone's getting taken out by John Wick and his magic bullets. And they shoot at John Wick.
Well,
and John Wick is able to like deflect machine gun fire or somehow never get hit. Like I can accept there's a certain amount of disbelief I go into with these movies, especially if they're shot well. again, see the bit with the cars or the stairs. This one I couldn't get behind. Like, this was a slow start for me.
Okay, let me tell you what's going on there a little bit. The armor in question, again, it's this. I believe it's the same armor that was being used by the assault team at the end of Parabellum.
Mm-hmm.
And they, part of the reason John Wick is able to get through a lot of this is frequently when you see him shoot them, they go down, but they get back up.
Mm-hmm.
He's shooting them in the armor to try and like generate space. Like, you take impacts, you know, you back up, maybe you get hit hard enough, you drop, and then you...
Yeah, you're not Batman from the Robert Pattinson movie.
Yeah, you're not waiting...
waiting into gunfire.
Yeah, you're not that. Nothing is that. I hate that movie. Like, the more I think about that movie, the more I dislike it. But he knows where... He knows which... but he knows where some of the chinks are. In fact, you see a lot of shots to the leg. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of guys get taken out with or disabled by leg shots to set up an attack to the throat or getting a gun into a proper position. So a lot of this is, a lot of it is like he's landing a lot of hits, but it's not doing anything except kind of stopping them from getting closer to him at various points or keeping them somewhat disabled so he can find the weak points and able to fully take them out.
Right.
And as for the bit about the arrows or certain parts of like knives being able to go through it, that's actually true, believe it or not. I'm not saying stabbing through Kevlar is the easiest thing in the world, but Kevlar is not designed to stop stabs. It's designed to stop bullets. And similarly, like, there are stab-proof vests.
Well, some of what he was wearing was, like, plate armor.
Yeah, some of it.
Like, the soldiers.
Yeah.
And they're being hit with arrows to plate armor.
Again, like, this is where the material becomes important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this is metal armor, then yeah, arrows are probably just going to bounce off.
Right.
Depending on what the material is, though... this is one of those things that I have enough knowledge about how some of this stuff works that I'm willing to kind of go with some of this a little bit, but I can see why it's a problem. Like, I'm not...
Don't get me wrong. Like, the setting is really nice. Like, I like the cherry blossoms and all that. And it certainly moved. I was just like... The action sequences get better as the movie goes on. I think I don't love that one to start with.
It's not my favorite from the movie, no.
Yeah. Moving on. It's a simple enough story. There's really nothing to criticize. It's, you know, it does kind of follow that video game thing of we got to see a guy. He sends you on a quest. You complete the quest. You go to the next level. You meet a boss. You fight the boss. Move on to the next thing. Go to the next level. It just goes on and on and on. What saves the movie for me is the duel. The duel with Donnie Yen is really impressive looking. It looks amazing. The setting is fantastic.
And bless the composer for wholesale cribbing from the immortal Ennio Morricone's style. Like, you can hear the influence of, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, like the Ecstasy of Gold bit in there.
Yeah. And then the way they finish off the boss, like, very satisfying. Like, this was a long ride. And I might lose people along the way if you're not totally into it. But the way that it ends is extremely satisfying. And then, you know, at least on screen, who knows? They kill off the hero. The hero dies having freed himself from slavery. And, you know, all he ever wanted to do was be with his woman. And, you know, he makes a mention of the tombstone thing about, you know, loving husband. Like, the thing about John Wick, you know, he divorced himself from this life. He got, you know, to coin a phrase, be punny, got dragged back in. And then it's been like four movies of Leave Me the Hell Alone. Just let me be. And he finally got his wish. And he got to be with his woman. And it's not a tragic ending as such. He got what he wanted. You know, there are people who talk about, like, Rocky at the end of that series, where there's a lot of talk of, like, he just wants to die. But he's willing to let cancer take him because life is what's between him and Adrian. And all he ever wanted to do was be with Adrian, which, you know, you could talk about that on another podcast, but that was kind of Rocky's thing. And then, yeah, I see that a lot in literature of people going, you know, I want to be with my beloved now. And so everything, you know, you can nitpick the 3-hour runtime. You can nitpick the,
I do.
So you can nitpick some of the action sequences, but when you're unlike fucking Ant-Man or some of these other movies that we talked about, you know, or better example, Shazam, an ending can really sell a movie and take it home, or yeah, can utterly destroy it. It absolutely not saves it, because it wasn't like it was going over the ditch, but it absolutely makes this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it builds and builds and builds, and evil is punished, and the hero gets, you know, goes off to be with his beloved. Perfect. Who could ask for anything more Toyota? A couple of other things. I want to go back to that action. I want to talk about the stairway sequence, because I made the joke about, you know, he fights almost to the top, gets his ass kicked down. This was another one where he, I don't know if you've ever rolled downhill before.
Once or twice.
But if you roll down like a short hill, you still get hurt. You hit rocks, you hit twigs. Like, you know, you might twist something. When you fall down a flight of stairs, it hurts. You know, you really can mess yourself up. This motherfucker fell down almost 120 flights of metal stairs, like concrete stairs.
I was going to say, yeah, they're not metal, but
concrete stairs.
Cobblestone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hitting things. Hitting the iron bars on the way down, you know, bumping every part of his body, including his head. And Donnie Yen gets him at the end. He's like, all right, get up. And he does. And look, I get what we're doing here, but there were times, like I said, that nigga dead. There's no fucking way. No way.
when he gets thrown off of that bridge the club in Germany.
Oh, that's when it was said. That's, yeah, like, absolutely when it got said.
Like, no, like, again, like, yeah, you should have rethought this one, guys.
Yeah. Again, like, what if we dropped John Wick from the space station in Black Widow on his head, even? Like, come on, what are we doing? Why?
He would have got up before Black Widow, apparently.
Like, oh, you got up before me. Yeah. I really don't have much else to say. If you're looking for like a traditional movie structure and looking for proper craft elements, you're not going to find it here necessarily. This is long stretches of action sequences strung together with a handful of talky scenes and a very thin plot. The acting is okay in places. It's not great in others.
I actually wanted to bring that up for just a minute, if you don't mind.
Yeah, real quick. Keanu Reeves isn't asked to do much. What he's asked to do is look cool on screen and beat people up and shoot them. They don't give him much of anything else.
Which is a surprisingly difficult thing to do, as we've come to find out with the number of people they've tried to make look cool doing that. That just don't work.
Let me say this last thing. With all the thing that makes the John Wick movies kind of stand out from some others, and the reason why I fought this, not the reason why I fought doing the John Wick series for a long time, because I'm more of a sci-fi fantasy, big epic story kind of a guy. You know, I like my Lord of the Ring. I'm allowed to like what I like. I'm, you know, like everybody, like Robert Winfrey likes to have an annual circle jerk at his house watching the Daredevil hallway fight scene.
Right? That is him
and Andrew Graham, you know, and all Pat, you guys just like to sit with the peckers out and watch Daredevil fight in the hallway. It's like the greatest thing you've ever seen. Okay. That doesn't, you know, however, fuck with me, will you? My thing is like the Battle of Pelennor Fields. The final battle in Avengers Endgame, you know, Helm's Deep, things like that. I like the big epic things. I like the final assault on Xandar at the end of Guardians, at the end of the first Guardians, stuff like that. So having said that, I don't tend to do a lot of these kinds of movies. Like, I don't watch the Jack Reacher. I don't watch like a lot of gunfu or like hand-to-hand combat movies because I don't find them interesting. And I got told with John Wick, like, give John Wick a chance. John Wick is so stylized. John Wick is so aesthetically pleasing that if you just focus on that, you'll be pleasantly surprised. And that's absolutely true. And it's more truer in the second, third, and fourth movies than in the first one. The first one's actually very story-laden, which is good. But that's the thing about this movie that I really wanted to draw attention to, was the time and meticulous nature of how precise each one of these action sequences were shot. They may not work for you, they may not work for everybody, but every single one of them, including fight with my analog from another dimension, you know, the big fat, you know, car dealer guy with the gold teeth. Yeah, that is totally me in another universe.
I imagine if you'd got the Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, headphones and ability, like you could find yourself over there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's me. That's my character.
Throwing spinning back kicks as a
being like 400 pounds and like throwing fucking sidekicks and shit, you know, and moving with like the speed of Muhammad Ali. He was great. I love that scene. It was so ridiculous. But my point is, like, the star of this movie, the action sequences, no two are the same. And what I like is that even from each guy forward in each one of these scenes, he's doing something just a little bit different. So that it isn't, and this is my problem with a lot of other movies, it isn't the same thing over and over and over again. There's enough differentiation, especially in John Wick 4, to keep me interested in what is essentially a kung fu movie. Right, now you can say your piece.
My favorite action sequence from this is actually the top-down perspective as he's using the dragon breath rounds.
Oh my god, everybody, like, the bunch of us in the bathroom after, and that's all everyone was talking about, the overhead shot.
It's reminiscent of, I believe they talked about the video game influence there. That draws from a video game called, I think it's Hong Kong Massacre, which itself heavily influenced games like Hotline Miami and, you know, plenty of other stuff that does the top-down shooter stuff. It's, you know, it's a genre. I got a kick out of that. I do want to talk briefly about acting, because when you take a minimalist script like this, good actors still find ways to bring weight to interactions and whatnot. And Sonata and Donnie Yen and Keanu Reeves all bring weight to their interactions, even though they're kind of brief.
Yeah.
Like the scene when Donnie Yen shows up to assault the Osaka Continental, there's a handful of lines between him and the character of Koji. Just a handful. But the way it's delivered and the way it's shot, it carries so much meaning. Like, you feel the weight of the history between those two characters there. And I just wanted to take a second and go, you know what? Good job, guys. Like, there's a lot, you know, you and I talk about this on occasion. There's a lot more to acting than line reading. And sadly, not a lot of people, that seems to be kind of a dying art. You know, what you can do beyond read lines convincingly. And these guys all brought something physical to what they were doing. They brought something in terms of delivery and posture to really kind of sell what's going on here. And I wanted to give them credit for that, because
Donnie Yen subtly acts with his body better than most people give line readings.
You're not wrong at all. He's great.
Yeah.
So, as far as the acting goes, like, that I thought deserved to be acknowledged. Here's my biggest gripe with this movie. Again, like, there's some compositing issues in places and whatnot that don't quite work for me. But my biggest gripe is Bill Skarsgård. The Marquis is he's not a good choice for the villain here. And I don't know how much of this is writing or acting or direction or, like, what combination of things resulted in this. But this is a character that, if he's not going to be physically imposing, and he's not meant to be, fine, you really need to lean a little harder into the sort of entitled impotence. And they never quite go far enough with his. You're supposed to dislike him. And part of the reason you're supposed to dislike him is, you know, because he's just kind of a douchebag in general, but he's very wealthy. He never does anything. Everything is done for him. And you kind of need a handful of moments with characters like that that really sell, like, just how douchey they are. And we don't really get that from him. We get a lot of him trying to be serious. I mean, the actor trying to be serious, not the
character. Needed to be more petulant.
Yeah, he really did. And as a result, he's just kind of a nothing villain when it's all said and done. And it's a shame. I mean, look, you couldn't have John Wick. You couldn't have John Wick.
I'm going to address it. We have our friend on Twitch who says he's basically Elon Musk. I don't know.
That's not my read. But he's... I mean, you needed a scion for the table because, like, John Wick taking down the table is like three other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he actually is like to go around and deal with the individual syndicates and whatnot that comprise seats at the high table. So giving them just a scion for him to deal with makes sense writing from a writing perspective. I just think the character was a miss here. And no, it's unfortunate.
He needed to be more petulant. He needed to be more bratty. You know, he needed to kind of be foppish. Like, he's like, I think they were trying to go with that with him. Almost like Bill fought it. Like, hey, I'm using the word like foppish, but another way of saying like, be more gay. you know, like, I don't wanna. That's insulting. Like, okay, but we want you to be like, you know,
have some personality, be a bit flamboyant.
Yeah, like
think, you know, John Malkovich in Rounder, like go for this, and he's just like, no.
Like, he needed to be a character from a John Waters movie.
Don't you and... look, I imagine like his contribution was, I'm doing the French accent, leave it alone.
Right.
Let me do what I want to do after that.
Like, we need you to be really over the top. Oh, I'll do a French accent. You're not thinking very big, are you, Bill?
No, yeah, it's sad because like everything else about this is very solid, and it's one of the things about the other couple of John Wick movies, you actually had good antagonists.
Right.
I mean, in the first one, between the snotty kid and the composed but still imposing Russian, you know, mafia leader, like, you had a couple of legitimate antagonists there for him to tangle with. You had the Italian guy in two, who actually is very personality driven. That works very well. And it just, you don't really have a singular antagonist through much of Parabellum. It's more like him fighting the system that's all collapsing onto him. But a really good villain would have sealed this movie in ways that sadly we just don't quite get.
Right.
So another like minor pick.
When John Wick shoots him, you're happy John Wick shot the villain. You're not necessarily happy John Wick shot him.
Yeah, and those are different emotions.
Yeah, because if he's like just a dirty rat bastard, like, this is like a common problem with writing in Hollywood, I also think.
You know who this guy needed to channel? He needed to channel Michael Pitt from Hannibal, the first iteration of Mason Verger.
So,
like, that's what this needed.
My other thought here is, they don't make him particularly menacing. Like, other than shooting Lance Riddick, what does he do in this movie? You know, like, he's constantly negotiating
badly.
He's constantly like negotiating and like trying to lowball people. Like, nothing goes his way, but it's like nothing goes his way, and he doesn't really menace anybody. It's just
the closest he gets to being like the kind of petulant character he needed to be was when he throws his cell phone after like near the end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
He needed to have,
weight. I feel like
there needed to be like a scene of him really getting a guy messed up, you know, like throughout the movie, you needed to see him being a bag of shit to people, and it succeeded. Yeah. So that when he's finally done, you're like, oh good. The worst guy in the movie got shot.
We needed to cut the Germany sequence. Like, that doesn't need to be in this movie. Like, I'm not saying you can't enjoy it. Like, there's stuff to enjoy about it. You know, I'm down for a good tomahawk fight. They're an underutilized weapon. But that whole sequence serves no real purpose.
It's almost like, again, it's like, well, this is the last of the John Wick proper movies. I know we're getting a continental show and we're getting spinoffs and whatever, but
allegedly
this is allegedly the last of the Keanu Reeves John Wick movies in this story, in this timeline. And I think they were like, well, it's the last one. The rule in Hollywood now is 3 hours. Like, we don't have nearly enough story for 3 hours. We'll send him on a side quest to Germany then.
Yeah, this is a movie that actually does kind of earn a longer runtime. But
not 3 hours.
Again, you shave that sequence out, you take half of that runtime dedicated to a bit more of the Marquis being just a terrible person.
Yeah.
And you wind up getting, I think you could get a better overall movie. Like this movie being like 2.5 hours, I don't bat an eye at. Like that, right. It's earned that. They didn't have enough to really to go as far as they did. And it's another minor nitpick. But all in all,
excess is what it is.
It is. And, you know, spectacle can be something to its own end. with that, and you know, so again, I enjoyed it. But you know, it's not above criticism. There's problems, but
yeah,
like, did I have fun? Yeah, I did. Do I think there's a lot good here? Oh yeah. Am I gonna miss this franchise now that it's kind of gone? You know, I might.
Somebody asked me the other day. They're like, "What's your favorite movie this year so far?" And I was struggling with that question because, like, I was thinking about, like, our reviews.
It's all been kind of meh.
Well, I mean, like, you and I gave good marks to Plane.
But yeah, but, you know.
We were like, it's a solid movie. Next. We're raving about this one. It's not perfect, but this is as high a praise, I think, as we give.
If we're talking about, like, if you want to talk about my personal favorite stuff that I've seen thus far in 2023. This is probably at the top at the moment. Like, I doubt it'll be there by the end of the year, but right now, yeah.
So, just a real quick thing before we move on. So, just kind of starting with Megan, we were like, meh. We liked Plane. Glass Onion doesn't count. We liked The Pale Blue Eye. That was the other one.
We did like that.
Yeah, that's at the top of the list. Knock at the Cabin, meh.
Meh.
Quantumania, meh. We liked Cocaine Bear, but we all kind of this could have been so much better.
I think it's not that we didn't enjoy ourselves at that movie, but unfortunately the ending left so much to be desired.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Like, an ending can kind of make or break a movie.
And
I liked Creed a lot. You didn't see it.
You would like Creed.
What'd you think of Scream 6? I haven't heard the review yet.
Fine enough.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed.
I'm trying to remember exactly what how we hammered that one out. Like,
well, I made that specific comment because this was the grittiest Scream yet. No, it wasn't. This was no more violent or gritty than 1, 2, or 5.
There's an attempt with the aesthetic of this one and the violence to be a bit more grounded. There's a handful of things that they try to go more graphic on. There's a lot of face stabbing in this one, yeah, as opposed to the others, which again may work for you, may not. Again, there's stuff about Scream 6 I liked. I actually really liked the sequence with when he gets a shotgun, because we can freshen up Ghostface a little bit here, guys. We really can.
Sure.
So again, there were positives. I think I was overall positive on it as a general rule, but I had my complaints. Like, there's still issues with it. And, you know, when you get a second tonight, when you're trying to go to sleep and not coughing yourself half to death, I imagine you can listen to the review for that one and it'll serenade you.
And then that brings us to then Shazam, we all thought sucked.
Hang on. Much as I dislike Shazam, it's probably better. I think it's a better movie actually than Quantumania.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sucked might be a little too harsh. So it's like, what's your favorite movie of this year so far? At the moment, it might be John Wick.
At the moment, yeah, it's John Wick. Like,
so what a weird world we live in.
At least Shazam's finale wasn't saved by a deus ex machina of ants with laser beams on their foreheads.
No, saved by fucking Wonder Woman doing a very brief cameo.
And much as that sucked, like, we both went, like, that doesn't actually solve that's not the climax. It doesn't solve the problem of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if she shows up and is drop kicks Lucy Liu, like, that's kind of the equivalent of, oh, Kang's starting to make his comeback and here's Dr. Evil with his sharks with laser beams on their freaking foreheads. No, wait, it's Michael Douglas with the Borg that are ants.
Yeah. All right.
Like, it's deeply unsatisfying.
All right. Speaking of deeply unsatisfying, here comes
the money.
Alrighty. On a budget of $100 million, this thing is making bank, yo.
Hang on. I hate to say only $100 million, but really?
Yeah, that's what it says here.
Nice. You know what? In the era when half of the wide releases are like $200 million plus.
Yeah, you know, they talked about on the last half in the bag, they talked about Cocaine Bear and Knock at the Cabin and how Universal really has like, they were jokingly saying like they figured out the Asylum formula.
You're not wrong.
You know, make movies for cheap, and if something hits, you make a tidy profit. Like, stop going big and expecting the world to see your movie. All right, for the weekend of March 24th to the 26th, John Wick was the number one movie of the weekend. Creed actually went up a spot from 3 to 2. Shazam fell from 1 to 3. No shit.
Oof. Hang on. Yeah. Let's take half a second here. F's in the chat for Shazam with its near 70% drop from last week to this one. Like that's as hard as Ant-Man dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was like, dude, Ant-Man is sucking it up so hard. This is actually like Shazam was dead on arrival.
Yeah, the whole like, I mean, like Flashpoint might do okay. Aquaman might do okay just because like.
Flash might because people want to see Michael Keaton as Batman.
Well, no, I mean the first Aquaman movie people liked it.
The first Aquaman movie did fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was $1 billion picture.
It did $1 billion, yeah. That's why I got greenlit for a second for sequel.
Yeah, this one's not. One, everything's still dead in the water while we hit reset. Two. If we're going to talk about this, we have to talk about Amber Heard's participation in that movie and the giant PR nightmare that that is. Like, that's not going to go over well. I think Aquaman 2 is, I don't think it's going to do well at all.
I don't know. I think it's pretty and it's in water and James Wan's competent and people like Jason Momoa, it'll be fine.
Again, I don't know. And then they've also got Blue Beetle sandwiched in the middle out there.
Oh, no, Blue Beetle's going to tank.
That thing's
going to. Ain't no one going to see Blue Beetle.
That's going to blow up on the launch pad. Just
yeah. No. That I know they were like, nothing goes to HBO Max, but bad decision. Scream fell from 2 to 4. Another movie that's bombing. 65 fell from 4 to 5.
Yeah, that's, ooh, man. That's bombing hard.
Can we just go ahead and say Adam Driver is not an action star? Adam Driver was in Star Wars. Adam Driver is a nice face to put in your movie. But stop making him like he's not the new action star. Adam Driver's not going to happen for you, guys. This is not.
Much like Margot Robbie trying to be a draw, Adam Driver as an action star is just not going to happen.
No.
Also bombing.
Yeah.
Quantumania.
There was an article today in Variety that it's not going to be profitable at all.
Who'd have thought? we talked about this last week. I think it was.
Yeah.
That thing had a $250 million budget. It's not hit $500 million worldwide. To say nothing of how that budget actually might be underreported. To say nothing of advertising. Your big Phase 5 launch blew up in your face.
Yeah. This is not looking good. Cocaine Bear dropped from 6 to 7. Jesus Revolution 7 to 8. Champions 8 to 9. Avatar 9 to 10. Puss in Boots 10 to 11. Debuting this weekend, A Good Person, The Lost King, School of Magical Animals, Que Viva Mexico, Tori and Lokita, Nam June Pike Moon is the Oldest TV, The Five Devils, What the Hell is Happening to Blood, Sweat, and Tears, The Worst Ones, and that's that. Worldwide, here's where we stand so far. Ant-Man still at number one with not even $500 million.
That
Creed,
Dude.
Yeah.
Not, you got a China release too. Like this thing got, it opened everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're not even hitting $500 million. It's not going to either. Like, look at that.
Yeah.
It's on HBO. It's on Disney Plus. What, next week?
I think so.
And you're going to top out at $470 million. That's comparatively speaking, that's not quite Babylon, but boy, are we close to it.
Well, look at that foreign take. $259 million foreign worldwide. Like, yeah. No one around the world saw it.
No one cares.
Yeah. Like, that is something that the audience is not there for Marvel movies. Like we might be experiencing more of like an American phenomena where we're still into it, kinda. But the world is kind of moving on.
Well, it doesn't help that, you know, China didn't see the end. They didn't see all of Phase 4.
Yeah.
I mean, we can make jokes about that, but we've talked about this too. Like, part of there is something of a need to remain present in the consciousness. And if if you've been 2 years without a Marvel movie and suddenly here's Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, all you're going to do is shrug.
It's been longer than that. It's the year of our Lord 2023, and they haven't had a Marvel movie since 2019. Remember, they got nothing in 2020.
Yeah.
2021 was Black Widow in the Eternals and Shang-Chi. Yeah.
So, again, like if you go that long without seeing a Marvel movie and then suddenly, hey, Quantumania, you're just going to shrug and move on. Like, meh.
Right.
I don't care anymore.
We need to talk about this. Jonathan Majors.
Sure. Let's talk about alleged domestic violence issues.
I mean, yeah. He, you know, in addition to, look, if you're going to like beat the Amber Heard thing to death, I'm not saying Jonathan Majors did anything wrong. We don't know. I'm not litigating that on this podcast.
All we're doing here is saying what's been reported. He was arrested on alleged charges. He is currently, I think he's out on his own recognizance.
Yeah.
Or made bail. One of the two. Right.
And I think his lawyer is saying this is all trumped up.
And yeah, his lawyer is saying, pardon my language, his lawyer is saying bitches be crazy.
Maybe they are, maybe they aren't.
We have no knowledge beyond this.
Right.
And that could go any number of ways. Maybe he did. Maybe she's making it up. Maybe, again, like there's any number of things here.
But the point is, on top of everything going on at Marvel, you know, they're cleaning out your executives.
If you're a big villain who's not a CGI'd head, you have an actor here that kind of matters. Yes. Gets embroiled in some giant controversy. Yeah, that's
a problem. Like, it's like you got to be an executive of Marvel going, like, what else can go wrong for us?
Have you seen some of there have been, like, again, it's various corners of the internet. Like, we're not talking like way corners, but there's rumbling starting to go out that, you know what? After Secret Wars, like after the Avengers Secret Wars, we're going to blow this up and maybe start from scratch.
I think they should.
I don't disagree with you. Like, I think they should do it now.
Well, I mean, see that they can't not see out the threat at this point, but.
Oh, they could. here's what'll do it. I don't think this will happen. Let me preface this. But if Guardians 3 does this, again, let's take a step to the world. Guardians 3 closes its run with $500 million more or less on the nose. Like, you break glass in case of emergency.
Yeah,
that's the point of no return. That is people throwing themselves out of windows.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they cancel projects if they're in mid-shooting, but if it's not shooting, it might get canceled.
Yeah, like that's where we are. And again, I don't expect Guardians Volume 3 to bomb. I expect it to do quite well. I expect the one after that to bomb because no one cares about that.
Yeah.
It's some dire straits over there.
It was
man.
One of those things where I saw it where, like, I don't really care what happens to Jonathan Majors. Like, if he did it, I hope he gets punished. If he didn't, I hope he gets away with, you know, I hope nothing happens.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really have a dog in the hunt. But I looked at that and I said, wow, Marvel can't catch a break at all. Like, not a single
anymore.
John Wick, making its appearance on the top 10 at number 4. Pathan, number 5. Shazam, 6. Chebby.
So, 7. Hey, where do we think John Wick ends up? Out of just idle curiosity.
I mean, Dungeons and Dragons is this weekend.
It's true.
And then Mario, then Renfield, then Evil Dead Rise, then Big George Foreman.
Mario is what's going to bulldoze the competition.
Yeah, well, also two different audiences, but I think Dungeons and Dragons is tracking really well.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a big hit.
That'll probably be your number one movie this coming week, would be my hunch.
Then Mario, I think, is going to sweep every scene.
Oh, yeah.
And then you'll get a break with Renfield and Evil Dead Rise. Like, I don't think Renfield makes the number one its weekend. I think Mario repeats. And then,
like you and I have mentioned this,
mm-hmm.
Super Mario Brothers, like that's a billion. Doesn't hit a billion, nothing is this year.
Right. Evil Dead Rise, like it's rated R, it's gross.
It's gonna that'll be fine and profitable. There's a decent following for that.
Yeah,
franchise.
But what'll be number one?
No.
You know, does Mario three-peat or okay. Evil Dead Rise number one movie?
I'm going to say no with a caveat.
Mm-hmm.
No, Mario will three-peat unless it sucks.
Okay.
Like I think even if it sucks, it'll probably beat Renfield.
So going back to John Wick, are the audiences for Dungeons and Dragons and John Wick completely the same? No, but there's a lot in the Venn diagram in the middle.
There's a chunk of overlap, yeah. Right.
There's less for Super Mario. So, 2 weeks out.
Well, no, I just mean what are we thinking? By the time it's all said and done, 300 million?
Yeah. I would say between 3 and 4.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which
is solid for $100 million R-rated action movie,
for sure. It's had the best opening I think
of the series. Franchise. Yeah.
Yeah. Cocaine Bear at number 8, and then Titanic at number 9.
All the movies not doing better than the 25th anniversary re-release of Titanic.
Here we go.
We have tragic, we have Tragic Mike.
Knock at the Cabin, Plane, 65. Missing, 80 for Brady.
Mummies.
Albie.com
2.
House Party, $9 million. I wonder how much that cost to make.
More than $9 million.
I'm curious, House Party. 2023. It was a $10 million budget, I'm going to laugh. They didn't even list the budget.
even that movie, you're probably looking minimum 10. Minimum 10. Considering LeBron James is all over it, I imagine it's more than that.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Next week D&D takes the top spot, and we're all just waiting around for Super Mario Brothers to show up and remind us what makes movies great.
Yeah,
I'm only half kidding about that.
Well, it's tracking well, it's looking well. I haven't seen if it's been reviewed yet. I know Dungeons and Dragons, the Rotten Tomatoes score is out now, and that's in the 90s. So
that sounds about right. The D&D movie will drop. It's gonna come down from the 90s, would be my hunch, but it's not gonna get into the 70s. It'll probably close either very low 90s or high 80s would be again, that's kind of my guess.
All right. We don't need to really do an extended money sequence. We can move on to we can move on to the critical review.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
No! No, God, please, no, 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 no.
Well, critics and audience scores agree.
Woo-hoo.
94, 95, so
90s.
No major controversy here. John Wick piles on more of everything and suggests that when it comes to a well-dressed Keanu Reeves dispatching his enemies and lethally balletic style that can never be too much.
There can, but I appreciate the sentiment.
All right. Candace McMillan of Seattle Refined.
Ooh. Well, the publication itself disqualifies you.
Interesting elements are stretched far too thin with bloated, excessive fighting sequences. The gratuitous violence and commando shooting do not offend me, but the film's superfluous meandering runtime certainly does.
Like, this is probably one of the biggest gripes with this movie, and it's the most fair. Like, this thing did not need to be 3 hours.
Stephen Rommel of the Australian Top Critic. 3 hours of relentless shooting and little acting makes the fourth film in the Wick franchise an epic disappointment. Not to anyone who likes these movies.
Not to anyone who likes this style of movie. Two, you're really selling some of the acting in this thing short. Again, it's not bombastic. It's not over the top. But there is some quality work being done by the people on screen, most of them.
Josh Glancy of the Sunday Times UK. This franchise's ambition has now undeniably exceeded its worth.
He said the thing that's in the movie. No. As it continues to rake in money.
Yeah.
It's exceeded its worth. How many hundreds of millions is this thing going to take in again?
Kevin Marr of Times UK, Top Critic. It's essentially a Jason Statham-style shoot-em-up that thinks it's a Christopher Nolan epic.
No. What in the world about this? Like, you just took two disparate things and tried to mash them together. Nothing about this movie thinks or feels like a Christopher Nolan project.
James Baradinelli, Real Views, Top Critic. John Wick has lost his mojo. The aspect of this franchise that made it compulsively watchable for the first two installments has degraded it during the last two.
Again, like I think part of the problem for a lot of these people is that we have changed stories here from the first two movies to the second two.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's a rough transition, but they're not the same kind of movie, and trying to compare them as such is just a mistake. Like, that's just you failing to understand the medium. Your media literacy is a question here.
Chris Klimek of Washington City Paper. The stylish shoot 'em up with John Wick franchise is running low on imaginative ammo in Chapter 4.
This is one of those guys who gets too caught up in the narrative, and like you're not appreciating the beauty of the action here. Like, again, this is spectacle, but spectacle, it does in fact have its own value, and this is lost on some of these people.
Black Robert Winfrey, Armin White says.
Okay, hang on.
National Review.
You just went by Kevin Carr to get to Armin White. Okay.
He didn't say anything worth reading.
I know, but it's kind of the gimmick at this point, isn't it? Okay, keep going.
Chapter 4 is a triumph of consistent style, a rare distinction among blockbusters usually dependent on conventional innovative effects.
Yeah, again, this is one of the things you and I praise. Like, there's every action sequence is different enough to be distinctive, but there's a consistent level of quality to what's going on, minus some of the compositing in the car scene, that is really good. Whereas, I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot. Some of the bigger budget movies, and I mean, I hate to just pick on Marvel because Shazam was guilty of this. Like, there's parts that are noticeably not this. Like, this was rushed. This got rushed. This got added last minute. Doesn't look as good, or we had to do reshoots and some of the actors don't even look the same anymore. Like, stuff like that. So he's not wrong when he says there's a consistency to John Wick 4 that is helpful.
Josh Bell, the Inlander, Spokane, Washington. Just last one. A self-indulgent mess lost in the Byzantine assassin underworld that has become the focus of the sequels.
I'm not sure how self-indulgent this is.
Yeah, I don't think it's self-indulgent at all.
Is it a little bit over? Is it overlong? Yes, but those aren't, like, don't confuse overlong with self-indulgent. There's very little about this movie that just exists to indulge the creators. And
yeah,
you he's trying badly to make a point, but he either misunderstands what he's trying to say, or his vocabulary is so stinted that all he can lean on is indulgent when he just means excessive.
All right. Well, that is our review of John Wick 4.
These are professionals.
Yep. One of our quicker reviews tonight. We're out in like less than an hour and a half, which is odd for us, but I'm also fucking dying over here.
Yeah, we want to make sure you die in peace on the steps of the Sankakor watching the sunrise.
I want to die mid-coitus.
Thinking about a podcast and then just falling over.
The way my ancestors intended. Just, you know, mid-sex. Just run on top of my wife. I want to ruin the rest of her year.
You're making me bite my lip.
All right. Tomorrow, a couple of weeks ago before my cruise, we were supposed to do this, but Pat's internet was acting up. I was not in a great mental place, so we ended up just putting it off. So we're finally going to get to it tomorrow at noon. Aaron Pryor versus Alexis Arguello.
Woo.
No podcast tomorrow night because I will be at Skid Row, Buck Cherry, and No Resolve. Wednesday, while I'm at...
like an address. I'll be in Skid Row. We're in Skid Row at the corner of Buck Cherry and No Resolve.
Yeah. Sounds like a Broadway musical.
It really does.
Well, I'm at Elevidi. Zach Strobel and Alexis Haina will be reviewing History of the World Part 2. Now, I was originally pissed about this. Like, you know, we talked about doing it together, and then it got moved, and it got moved to a day that I couldn't do. And I was like, oh, fuck me then. I guess I'll just thrown off my own show as per usual. Then I watched History of the World Part 2. I love Mel Brooks. I really don't want to say anything bad about him. I'm glad I'm not on this review.
Because you'd have to say a lot of bad things.
It's so bad, dude. Like, there were some things that I thought were funny. And I definitely laughed at times. But Alexis and I have talked about this with, like, Animaniacs and certain other, like, comedies that we've talked about, cartoons, where it just feels like comedy writing in Hollywood right now is angry people taking out their frustrations on the audience. And I don't really enjoy it.
You're not wrong.
A lot of it was agenda driven. A lot of it was we're the smart people with all the right answers and we're going to write jokes about that. And I was like, eh. Like there were things I thought were funny, which may have also gone under that, but they got away with it because I laughed. So like the Rasputin Jackass stuff I thought was great. the Jesus like Last Supper recording sessions that mocked the Beatles thing that my wife and I watched on Apple Plus Disney Plus, that was funny. Like the stuff with the Civil War, a lot of the stuff with the Russian Revolution, I'm like, why do we keep coming back to this? This is terrible. It's a lot of on the nose humor too, where we watch this with our kids.
That was a mistake.
So for first fucking episode, second sketch is the Kama Sutra. And both my kids are looking at us like, well, we're here now.
Want to have this conversation?
Yeah. It's like, oh boy. My kids are so funny about that. They're like, they know they shouldn't be seeing something like that. So we just cover their eyes.
Good like, for them.
Yeah. They're good kids. Anyway, so yeah, Zach and Alexis can fucking have it. I don't care.
You would just be Molotov cocktailing that thing. Just.
Yeah. It's WrestleMania weekend. We're going to kick things off with a re-airing of our Roddy Piper tribute from a few years back that we did after he passed away. And then Everyone Loves a Bad Guy Saturdays is Dr. Doom. Yep. We went head-to-head. The Joker versus Dr. Doom, and I lost. Sons of bitches. I go with the opinion that people just like Pat. And that, and that's why that got more listens than the one you and I did.
Like, I make no judgment. I had fun talking to both. Like, those are both fun episodes.
Oh, yeah. The Joker's. The ones that I'm on with you for Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, I do say so myself because I've listened to all of them. Like, I think there's really good conversations there. I will tell you this. I can hear, like, you dealing with me, like, on the Shield one and some others. And I think about, like, Jesse. Like, I really have to be either told shut up or have, like, control myself because if you don't, I will talk forever. And I can hear you on some of the Everyone Loves the Bad Guys that we did where you're just like waiting for me to stop talking and I won't. I just keep going.
Yeah. One or two.
So those were fun shows, though. Those were enjoyable times. And then Sunday, we have Metal Hammer of Doom, Austrian Death Machine, Triple Brutal. That's a re-air from 2014. Monday night is a holdover.
Back when, 2014, back when Austrian Death Machine was still around. We missed them.
2014, when this used to be fun. when I have good memories.
Almost 10 years ago, Mark.
Yep. Anyway, next Monday night, a week from tonight, Jason and I are going to do a long road to ruin for 48 hours. That was supposed to be part of the podcast month thing, but yeah. Well, we couldn't fit it in, so I was like, fuck it, we'll just do it in March. It's fine. Then Dungeons & Dragons, and then Jason will be back on in the middle of the day. We're going to do a triple feature for some new horror movies that have come out in the last couple of months. Sick on Peacock, not a real service. Children of the Corn, the new remake, and There's Something Wrong with the Children.
Of all the Stephen King movies out there, of all the Stephen King adaptations out there, of all the material that exists, I cannot for the life of me understand why Children of the Corn is the one that just keeps on, that zombified corpse keeps walking.
All right, go ahead and do your plugs, and then we'll get out of here.
All right, the big plug I want to get out of the way is something I did last night. After I recorded the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast, which if you're interested in the sport of mixed martial arts or combat sports more generally, give that a listen. That episode was a review of UFC on ESPN 43 and a little bit of discussion about some of the news in the combat sports world because, well, of course there is. I'm going to do my other stuff recently. After this gets done, I'm going to hop on over and review AEW's Dark Elevation. That'll be a good time. Maybe. I don't know. It's Elevation. You never know. WWE SmackDown on Friday. I was waiting because I knew something related to WrestleMania or whatnot was going to get called up. I usually do. I didn't know what it was. Turns out I have now been called up from the batter's box. And Saturday, technically after, it's not even noon for me, actually. It starts at 11 for me. I will be covering NXT Stand and Deliver. My expectations are not high. So that will be doing that Saturday. There is no UFC event on Saturday, so nothing there. They're staying out of the way of WrestleMania. And at the moment, I'm not scheduled for WrestleMania Nights 1 or 2. I believe Jeff Harris will be on site as credentialed media for that, so good for Jeff. But if something happens, they're going to call me because I'm reliable. And I don't always think that's a good thing, actually. But the big thing I did last night is I was bullied, Mark. I was bullied by you and others into recording something different.
First of all, keep my name out your fucking mouth.
You bullied me.
Oh, you're talking about your Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes thing?
Bullied by you and Pat and Sean and Benjamin and Jesse and all of you. I said, I've been thinking about doing this. And you all jumped at me and said, do it. And I went, stop yelling at me. Fine, I'll do it. Just stop the yelling. Now, none of you will actually listen to it because that's how this goes. But I have a kind of a inspired by hardcore history style examination of the upcoming main event for WrestleMania between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. So if you're interested in that, it's me kind of recounting the narrative to this point, looking at the character motivations between the two of them, why I think Cody's the one to finally dethrone Roman, apart from, you know, everything. Like when you take a step back and just go, yeah, you know, Roman wants to be done for a little bit. Cody's the guy. Like looking at it from a story perspective and why it still makes sense, why it's still right. So I tried something a little bit different. I fully kind of anticipate it crashing and burning, but if you're interested, give it a listen. It's up, you know, wherever you can find, not wherever you're watching this, if you're watching on Twitch, but if it's on our YouTube feed, I believe, right? And as well as all the other podcast stuff, so.
Yes, I went behind you and made sure it went on YouTube because you keep forgetting to click the button.
I don't click the button because if I do, you yell at me for not having a thumbnail made. Would you like me to click the share on YouTube automatically button for stuff I upload going forward?
Yes.
Okay.
And I find your art for you.
I do the art. Like you say, find a picture. I upload the picture for that, but I don't. But thumbnails are a different thing.
Yes, I need a wide one, but I don't put that on you or Jesse for that. Well, no, Jesse makes his own art now.
I was gonna say Jesse does his own stuff. Like
Jesse does his own stuff. Yeah, Jesse does his own stuff for YouTube. But like sorry, for Unspoken Issues and source material. Yeah, he's really good about getting the art. When he was putting up like the auction stuff for the Snap, yeah, there was no art to be found. I fucking laid into him about the Snap stuff. I'm like, why are you putting up all these shows? Like, there's no art for. You tell me to go suck a dick. I'm like, eh.
I'm giving you content and you're whining about the
kinda. It's like, shut up.
All right. So anyway, I will do that going forward then, if that'll make you happy.
Also 12:05.
Trying to draw this out just a little bit longer. So anyway, point being, if you want to see me try something a little bit different or hear me, give that a listen. Negative feedback is always appreciated. Positive feedback scares me. So, you know, it's strange and new. I kid. Anyway, that's all I've got. So we'll be back here next week for Dungeons & Dragons with Ronnie Adams. And Mark will make weird sexual innuendos at him being a dungeon master. As you always do. You will reference his long deceased podcast.
The other thing I have to do is make sure Alexis doesn't keep cutting him off.
Yeah, you get to play ring later on that one.
Yep. All right, folks. For Robert Winfrey.
Yeah, we thank you all very much for listening, watching live or after the fact. Appreciate you guys. Thank you very much. Interact with the product if at all you can. Like, comment, subscribe. If you're on Twitch, follow. Follows are free, as are subscriptions on YouTube. If you're listening on any other devices, star rating, written review, whatever you can do to help out the product and stave off this ravening Lovecraftian Eldritch monstrosity that is the algorithm that dictates all these things. It's running our lives, Mark. The algorithm is running our lives, not for the better.
Okay.
You done with my gimmickry now? Like you look done.
Be well, be safe, and behave.